How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dress, the History of Fashion is a production of Dressed Media. With over 8 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed, the History of Fashion, a podcast where we explore the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, April Callahan
and Cassidy Zachary. Dress listeners, this week's episode is such a treat. By now, you have surely all heard about or seen the newly released, highly anticipated film Wicked, which opened to record box office numbers this past weekend. And this film is part one of a two-part installment based on the wildly popular Broadway musical of the same name, which is still running after making its debut in 2003. And the musical itself is a loose adaptation of a 1995 novel by Gregory Maguire entitled Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, which, as the title makes clear, is itself a loose adaptation, or revisionist adaptation, I should say, of L. Frank Baum's 1900 novel, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
And for those of you who might not be familiar with the story, the Broadway production, and now film, takes us into the lives and complex friendship of Elphaba, who becomes the Wicked Witch of the West, and Glinda, who becomes Glinda the Good. And it is essentially the story before and after Dorothy's time in the world of Oz. And these roles were originated on the stage by Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth, and are now being brought to the big screen by their fellow vocal powerhouses, Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, in this two-part film in theaters now.
And today we are so pleased to be joined by the film's costume designer, Paul Tazwell, who is inarguably a powerhouse in his own right. He is the best of the best at what he does. And Paul is an award-winning Broadway and Hollywood costume designer who is responsible for designing some of the most important visual and groundbreaking masterpieces of our time.
And while Paul did not design the costumes for the original Broadway version of Wicked, that was Susan Helferty, he designed more than a few productions you all will definitely know of, including revivals of classics like Guys and Dolls, The Miracle Worker, Jesus Christ Superstar, as well as the Broadway debuts of The Color Purple, and most recently, Suffs, which is about the early 20th century American women's rights movement and the campaign for the right to vote. And also cast one of my all-time favorite productions, Death Becomes Her, which is, of course, based on the 1992 cult classic film of the same name. But most famously, he designed just, you know, a little this little thing, you know, groundbreaking, earth-shattering production known as Hamilton. And of course, he took home a Tony for that. And he has been nominated for the Tonys 9 times.
But we are here today because Paul's talents are not confined to groundbreaking stage productions. And his first feature-length film was 2019's Harriet, about Harriet Tubman, followed by Steven Spielberg's West Side Story in 2021, which earned Paul his first Oscar nomination. But let me assure you, this will not be his last Oscar nomination. He surely has one coming his way very, very soon. And once you have seen Wicked, you will know why.
We are so excited to go behind the scenes of this incredible production with Paul today. Paul, thank you so much for joining us on Dressed.
Paul, welcome to Dressed. I am so excited to talk to you today.
I am so glad to be here.
Yeah, I just saw the film with millions of others this past weekend. I'm still on quite a high, I have to say. I've been singing the songs all weekend. I mean, Such an absolutely visually stunning film, such an incredibly moving film. I think especially at this time right now, we all needed some magic in our lives. So I just wanted to start off by saying thank you and also congratulations.
Thank you so much for saying that. Yeah, I think that it has come at just the right time. It is a story that fills our hearts, and I'm so glad to be a part of it.
And just the fact that you even have time to be here with me today, there has been such a whirlwind of press surrounding this film's release. It's been so much fun to watch Cynthia and Ariana just delivering on the fashion with what has become now known as method dressing, I guess, dressing for their character or an inspiration of their character throughout their press tour, which has been so much fun. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but that's just been such a pleasure to watch.
I didn't know that there was a term for it, or an official term. Yeah, it is indeed, on-theme dressing, which it speaks to, I would say, their excitement about the film overall. I think that it also allows for the audience to really engage with just the lead up and that it creating excitement. And they're both, I've said it before, they're huge fashion icons themselves. They always deliver with their, I mean, even when they're dressing down, they were completely giving their all with their fashion.
And I have to say too, you've been a huge part of this press tour as well. And I feel like this is next level promotion of a film's costume designer. Is this type of press tour new for you? Because you are everywhere they are, essentially doing the same media interviews, and you're really a significant part of promoting this movie.
Oh my gosh. I mean, no, I have never seen the ask for my part of it, but I'm delighted to have a light shined on the work overall. I mean, it's for everyone that worked on the costumes for Wicked, it's an amazing thing for them to be able to see their work represented out there. And just to show the importance of costume design in the process of storytelling and all that is just so great. I am so grateful, definitely.
Yeah, I think this is really significant and exactly what you just said in highlighting the significance of costume design, which maybe is not something people always think about. And if you're doing your job correctly, right, the costumes kind of play seamlessly within the narrative. But I think this also just speaks to how, again, significant your costume designs are for this film. You played such a significant and integral role in bringing this fantastical world to life. And we're going to dig into that a little bit later. But because this is the first time that you've been on the podcast, I really want to get to know you a little bit and maybe talk about your personal journey to becoming a costume designer and to designing this film, because in a small way, it could be argued that this is maybe prophesized in your youth, or you've come full circle in your youth, but more on that in the minute. But I want to ask you a question I love asking people on Dressed, which is, do you have an earliest memory of clothing or the power of clothing from your youth that you'd like to share with us?
Clothing, I mean, just my own creative journey with clothing, I think it started with a bed sheet ripped off of my bed on a Saturday morning as I went down to watch cartoons. But I would drape it in some dramatic way, it was my toga for the morning. and that was probably when I was about 5 years old or so. And then I would say something that was very specific that I've always held on to, and really, even when I was designing Wicked, it came up, but Disney's Cinderella, and most specifically the transformation of Cinderella when she goes from rags to her beautiful dress, her ball gown, and just the way that was represented, and also what it says about, yeah, indeed, it's a fairy tale, but just how it's a metaphor for their evolution and how you see yourself and just how clothing changes who you are and how you represent yourself and how you take up space. And that you can read a lot into that. But I think that the idea of that kind of magical transformation has always been a part of just how I imagine, just how I imagine fantasy and designing in that way. And, it led into my interest in dresses overall, in period and researching period, and that led me to corsetry and petticoats and the underpinnings of historical clothing. And then I was, at the same time, I actually fell in love with theater and performance but from the performance side, more so than from the design side. It was operating simultaneously, but really my heart at that, in my formative years, that it was moving towards performance, whether it was going to be in theater or as a dancer or as a film actor. But when I was in college, I ended up making the decision that it was best for me to go towards costume design. And that was where I ended up. And that's, I'm so grateful that I did. I think that I made the right decision for me. I don't know if you want to get into it, but we, you know, the reasons that I chose that route, some of that was how I was imagining what my career would be as an actor at that time. And that was coming up in the 80s. And I just wasn't seeing reflected people that looked like me being in leading male roles in musicals, which was actually my focus. So I made a choice to go towards costume design because I thought that my longevity would be just more possible with the world of costume design.
Which is really interesting when you actually look at a lot of the productions that you have gone on to design are groundbreaking productions featuring all Black casts or just in terms of the representation. Like, you have still been there at those really significant moments in theater history, but behind the scenes dressing those actors. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I just to tag onto what you said, and I've not talked about that so much. I've had opportunities to do hugely groundbreaking theater productions like Noise Funk, that kind of production that had never been seen before. Carolina Change, it was a George Wolfe production by Tony Kushner. Again, representing story in a way that was just pretty remarkable. And then you go into something like Hamilton that really captured the zeitgeist of, I think, America overall and what was going on. It has been a huge and really wonderful journey.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that journey before we dive in to get into more of your current career. Because as you mentioned, so in high school, you went to a performing arts high school, I believe. And that's where you, I believe, started and also designed the costumes for The Wiz. Which you will go on to design the live production of The Wiz. And then, of course, that ties into Wicked today. But then you went, I think, to Pratt for fashion design.
I did. Yeah. So that was right out of high school.
And then you were designing, you got your big break, I think, in the early 90s. Yeah. And you're working on Broadway throughout the 90s, right? I'm just curious about Paul in the 90s in New York.
What's interesting, because I was at NYU in the late 80s. I was getting my graduate degree in costume and set design. And then I was invited down to the Arena Stage in Washington, D.C., which is a regional theater, one of the first regional theaters to be established in America. And they had a huge program. But I was led by Zelda Fitchhandler, and I was invited down to first to design a production called Stand Up Tragedy. And then I was asked to be the resident costume designer. So I was designing there for then the next 8 years, living in D.C. and designing there. What was beautiful about being there was that there was, you know, a staff of amazing creatives, meaning costume makers, that had been there for a long time. And that was their chosen career. And so I was able to work with them and really hone my skills as a designer. And it gave me basically access to a workshop of very talented craftspeople to investigate whatever it might be. And they had seasons that were varied, but very exciting, where they might do a musical, or they do a fantasy, or they do a classic, some either Shakespeare or Ibsen or something like that. And so my work was realized at a level that was pretty high. And I think that work was seen then by people in New York. And that was when I started to get invited to New York. And one of those happened to be Bring In The Noise, Bring In The Funk. And that was directed by George C. Wolfe. And at the time, he was the artistic director at the Public Theater in New York. And then it built on that. As far as my, you know, a broader professional career, I was also doing other productions at other regional theaters around the country. It gave me the opportunity to introduce myself and my work to many other theaters around the country. Much of that work tended to be, as you were saying, tended to be stories about people of color, whether it was an August Wilson play or other classics. At the time, some theaters were doing classics, but cast with Black people, with Black actors. So I was often invited to be a part of those productions. And then I might get invited back a second or third time because they saw what I could do, not just limited to not that it was limiting, but not just limited to stories about people of color, but a broader scope of what theater was, the theater that was being done.
Yeah. And I think when you reach a certain level, too, of being a costume designer where you're really respected, you've earned all of these Tony Awards and nominations like you have, that you get to start being able to choose which productions you do. And I think when you look at your resume, it becomes very clear that you're very thoughtful about what you do. And it just so happens that a lot of those projects turn out to be incredibly successful and really important. Of course, very familiar, very beloved stories, things like even like Death Becomes Her, which is on Broadway right now, which is a movie that from my childhood that I grew up watching. It's a cult classic that's on Broadway, or something like Wicked. But then there's also very real historical figures like Alexander Hamilton, Ida B. Wells, Harriet Tubman. You've costumed all of these people at one point or another. Does your approach to costume design change if it's for Alphaba versus Harriet? So a fictional versus a real life figure?
What stays the same? Because yes, indeed, it is different. The storytelling can be different. It is often defined by how the director wants to tell the story. What is that point of view? And it might be, you know, the questions of, are we representing realistically what the historic figure, say with Hamilton, did we want to be beholden to the specifics of that period, or were we going to expand beyond that? That was a huge conversation that we had as we were trying to figure out, how do we want to tell this story? And do we want for it to be in contemporary clothes as opposed to in period clothes? Where we ended up, and this is with Tommy Cale, who was the director, and also Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote it. I don't know if it's obvious, but obviously.
Very famously.
Yes, yeah. But we had to decide what serves the way that we want to tell the story, given the style of the presentation of it, the music and the language that create what Hamilton is. What is our visual going to be for that? And we ended up arriving somewhere in the middle of that, and always thinking about what is the most dynamic way to do that. When you're thinking about something that is more like a film, like Harriet, was important to give an accurate view of what that world is and what life was for Harriet at that time, and the slaves and the plantations and how those operated. And there's still design that's involved. There's color palette that becomes controlled, and the level of detail might shift or change the distressing or the breakdown of the costumes, and to what level, and what are we trying to say about the people, and how do we honor their dignity and self-respect. And as a designer, I'm balancing a lot of those questions and making choices about all those questions, which is exciting. It's hugely exciting. The commonality of all of that is that I want for the character to be as honestly representative as I possibly can. Meaning, I want for the actor to be able to deliver their performance in a way that the audience can engage with that performer and they feel like there's just a connection, whether it's visceral, it's emotional, it carries a poetic essence or weight. My hope is that it will embody all of that, whether it's represented in a directly historically accurate way, or if it is represented in a more abstract way. So it just depends on what the style will be of the overall production. And it's always decided with the set designer and the lighting designer or the production designer and the cinematographer, and we're always working together in an organic way to decide what is the look of this piece going to be.
And I have to say, Harriet specifically is such a masterclass, and Wicked is too, and we'll talk about that very shortly, but in how dress is used to tell stories and how you use things like color and texture to tell the evolution of Harriet's journey throughout this film. And just a couple things before we move on, because I just think it's so fascinating. You talked about in interviews how you use this newfound photograph of Harriet Tubman that I didn't even realize existed. But prior, it had just recently been discovered, and you use that as inspiration. She's younger, gives you a sense of her style, I think. And then in that same interview, you talked about how in your process, you immersed yourself in her world by tracing her footsteps because you wanted to kind of incorporate that environment into her clothing. Yeah. Can you just talk a little bit more about that? Because I think that's a very special and not necessarily typical approach to costume design.
Sure. I think that it is, for me, entering into the journey of designing Harriet, I did want to just better understand who this woman was potentially. And in a way, again, that as you were stating, that I could feel so that I can then make choices about what she would wear. I think that speaks to what my process is, I step into the shoes of a character to make choices about what they're going to wear that feel accurate to a person's choice. I mean, we all get up every day and we put on clothes to face whatever event that we have in front of us in the day. And we may choose to wear the same thing that we wore yesterday, but you're making a choice to do that. And that is the reality of dressing ourselves. So pulling that idea into how I'm going to dress someone else and be reflective of their character in an honest way and what their journey is in an honest way, I felt that I just wanted more information. Some of that was, as you said, it was inspired by a photograph of Harriet Tubman when she was younger. And it's at the Smithsonian now, but it was a portrait of Harriet younger, in her younger years. And she is dressed up in this beautiful mid-19th century dress, and her hair is pulled back. And it's a fairly formal photograph. But it was Harriet Tubman represented in a way that I had never seen, where we'd come to know her as this woman who always had a head wrap on and who dressed in dark clothes and just had a very stern and dour expression. And this photograph opened up the possibility that just like it makes perfect sense. I mean, that when she was younger, yes, indeed, she had lighter clothing that was more formal than the kind of somber clothing that she ended up wearing, what could be seen as somber clothing that she was wearing when she was later in her life. But most of those older pictures are the pictures that we collectively refer to in history classes, and that's how she's represented in books and as she's depicted in history. And, I guess the idea of slavery and how it is seen through media and through stories, and indeed, it was a grim life, absolutely. But that was one of the elements that we wanted to open up, which even though it was a grim life, she had internal dignity that inspired her and moved her to make a change in her life by freeing herself and then freeing multitudes of other people. And that is huge. And so where does that come from? And how do I project that, underscore that with the clothing choices that I make for her? And that was part of what defined some of where we went with her clothing. That was part of her later journey, where her earlier journey was actually embracing the truth that, yes, she would walk through the swamps in bare feet and trap beaver and other small animals. And she was laboring on a plantation and just all the disgusting things that she had to live through, which actually compelled her then to make a difference in her life as well. And find her own dignity. And I think showing that emotional arc and also arc of reality from her life, just the incidents in her life, it gives you a bigger, broader sense of who this woman was, as much as we can say who she was from everything that you can read about her.
like I said, masterclass in storytelling. And again, something you might not necessarily know until you talk to you and hear from you about the thought that goes into the character development. It's incredible. And of course, Cynthia played Harriet. So you had a lot of experience working with her. She's embodying this iconic real life character. And now you're working with her embodying this iconic fictional character in Wicked, which, you know, is also a very familiar, very beloved story. Even as Wicked's plot challenges everything we know about the so-called Wicked Witch of the West and Glinda the Good Witch, audiences are still coming into this movie saying, I have an idea of what this world should be. I have an idea of what this world should look like. And that's not just the Broadway production. That's, of course, the 1939 film. There's a lot of visuals associated with this story and this narrative. Can you talk a little bit about how you negotiate honoring those original sources, but then coming in and making the costumes your own and bringing something new?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's, you mentioned it a little bit with the introduction, you know, the story of Wicked and those characters, and also the story of the Wizard of Oz, has been in my life at least since 1978. And that was when I was introduced to the film of The Wiz and embraced that. I mean, you know, it became one of my favorite films. And then when I was 16 years old, I was given the opportunity to design the costumes for my high school production of The Wiz. And then I played The Wiz in that production as well, which I always think is pretty funny, but it speaks to just everything that I was trying to embrace at that time and figure out. But it is the characters that, and our experience with those characters as Americans, because it really is the quintessential American fairy tale that is germane to us as Americans, that we kind of can own ourselves, you know, from Frank Baum's The Wonderful Wizard of Oz and those books, that series of books. Because it's been a part of American culture, everyone has their own ideas of what this world is and how, whether it is The Wizard of Oz, the MGM movie that Judy Garland was in, or it's The Wiz that was either on Broadway or the one that was made into a film, or it's Wicked. And Wicked has been hugely embraced. It's got a huge fan base, as we've seen represented in the wonderful, you know, box office numbers, which are amazing. But how people want that story served up, I made it important to acknowledge what that might possibly be as I was starting to redefine who these characters are visually. And the ask was to, because I said to John Chu when we were starting, I said, how do you imagine that this world will be represented? You know, and it was leading. The question was, because I was wondering if they wanted to recreate what had been done on Broadway, or if they wanted a brand new world, a brand new vision for what the world of Oz would be. And indeed, I was so glad to hear that both John and the producers were very much interested in recreating, redefining what our visual world would be for Oz. That said, acknowledging the fan base and also everyone that was familiar with The Wizard of Oz and everyone that was familiar with The Wiz, I thought that it was important to be able to pull them in a way that felt where they feel familiar and comfortable in the world that we're creating, where the way that we are serving up is taking a hold of the same spirit, and that it doesn't become so foreign that it becomes distracting. And that, thankfully, I had the opportunity to do something in a little bit smaller scale with West Side Story when I designed that for Steven Spielberg. But we're talking about another musical, West Side Story, a film that is hugely beloved. And I love that design. It's always been a go-to to watch and to study, and others as well. So when I'm tasked with reimagining what this world would be, I go after how does this movie overall make me feel? And how do the different scenes make me feel one against another? And how can I imagine a world or a visual that will make me feel the same way, but be different? And so I applied that to the approach with West Side Story, and then carrying that to its next level, applying that to Wicked as well, and really studying how I feel about certain scenes and when I listen to the music, what comes out of it, and just really paying attention to what effect all of it has on me, and then being able to reimagine how to get that same effect in a different way. But we're always going to have Glinda as a character, Glinda the Good, and Elphaba, and the Wizard of Oz. All of that still needs to be present, and also they need to talk to each other. They need to make sense within each other as well. So it is a more organic process than, it's not just kind of intellectual, okay, well, you do this and this and this. I mean, it really is, how does this world make me feel?
Yeah, and I think that's when you learn about your history as a performer, that approach, it feels like you brought some of that to your costume design process, because I don't think this is necessarily typical costume designer approach, but I think it brings something really special to your designs.
Definitely. I mean, it's definitely the case with, you know, think about Hamilton. I wouldn't have been able to design Hamilton the way that I designed it until I had the collective of what my career was and all of the different experiences that then led me to design Hamilton. Because I had tried things out, I had just investigating different kinds of storytelling and then how to be in control of clothing and what those images become when you strip them of detail and when you sort them in different ways. For Wicked, you know, it was much the same, where I was looking at the Wizard of Oz, studying that and looking at how period silhouette is depicted within this fantasy world, and also acknowledging the fact that it was done in the 1930s or 1939. So that defines how we see some of these shapes as well. The Glinda dress is an 18th century silhouette, which is mid 19th century as well. And that collective then that moves it away, it becomes an icon and it moves it away from being a specific period. And that was what I was going after with Wicked, is that my lens is the 2024 lens, and everyone coming into, for right now, everyone coming into the film has all the imagery that we see day in, day out, that's in, you know, our Instagram and on TV and in films and in magazines. There's so much information that we take in visually. And how can I maximize that, really? Take hold of that and maximize it and create a world that feels nostalgic of or familiar to, a throwback to whatever that moment might be, and then orchestrate it in a way that tells the story and makes sense where it defines itself. And that was largely what I was after overall.
Dress listeners, holiday shopping season tis upon us, and Rakuten is the best way to save lots of money this holiday season. Why? That's because you can stack holiday sales and deals on top of Rakuten's cashback program to maximize your savings at 3,500 stores.
How does it work? Well, your favorite stores pay Rakuten to send them shoppers, and Rakuten passes some of that money directly onto their members via cashback, by PayPal, or a check.
And this holiday season, cashback rates will be the highest of the year, up to 15% depending on the store. And we are talking across every single category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, travel, and dining.
As a pet owner, I especially love the fact that I can get cashback at PetSmart and Chewy when I shop them via Rakuten. Membership is free and it's easy to sign up. Join the 17 million members who are already saving. Start all of your holiday shopping at Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cashback really adds up. Us ladies have all been there. Feeling a smidge off the days before your cycle is something that we have all experienced at one point or another. For some of us, it's occasional. For others, it's a monthly battle.
Which is why Happy Mammoth has created Estro Control, a capsule containing science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health, especially in women who suffer from PMS.
The way estro control eases PMS is quite interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that's where our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when the estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, this can potentially trigger PMS.
Estro control is made specifically for women who are premenopausal, so it's perfect for women that haven't entered menopause yet. In fact, it's amazing for perimenopause, when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS can hit hard.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DRESSED at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DRESSED for 15% off today.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
And I would say you absolutely brought something new, even while paying homage and being respectful of what people expect, which you certainly delivered on. Your genius is the details, which you don't get necessarily on a Broadway stage, right? When you're doing theater, the person in the front needs to see the costume just like the person in the last row. But in film, it's all of those details are right up there where we can see them. And something I so appreciate about you is that you have thought through every single detail. And when I say every single detail, I mean down to Elphaba's pinky rings, which I think is so interesting because each and every piece has a story and a reason behind it. And can you talk a little bit more about maybe Elphaba's pinky rings and what they symbolize and their connection to nature and her role within this larger Wizard of Oz world?
What you're pointing out is where with Nathan Crowley, the production designer, and myself, what we realized is that we had to create rules for this world to live, to be believable. And Nathan was big on representing a sense of reality and quite literally represented in all of the sets that he designed. They're huge sets, some that were 4 football fields big of scenery that was created. So you've got real actors on real scenery and real crowds needing to fill these spaces. For me, I was really quite interested in everything down to how something was going to be stitched and all the embroidery and all the different buttons that I was making decisions about every different element that we were going to have represented within the clothing so that it was all there. It was all real and you could feel the world, just this palpable sense of this world, albeit fantasy, that it actually existed and that the audience could then immerse themselves in. Nature was one of my first inspirations for the world, partly because of its timelessness quality, that you can't pin it down to a specific year. And then also because I felt that Elphaba, you know, I was seeing the world through the characters of Elphaba and Glinda, and that is the focus, which is the beauty of their relationship and how they change each other's lives. Nature felt directly connected to who Elphaba is as a character because of her advocation for animals, because it is a grounding for her. And also she is in control of the elements. She's in control of gravity. And so therefore is connected to nature. And that idea led me to look at different kinds of textures of nature, because then I'm starting to think, you know, it's like, how can I represent that in clothing? And where I went to was, there was a documentary on mushrooms. And so I was looking at that and I, you know, they were showing images of the underside of mushrooms and other kinds of the fungus that was growing. And, you know, it just all looked magical. And the way that the world of mushrooms was presented is they were talking about the interconnectedness of those systems and how they talk to each other. And also how trees talk to each other as well. And then I started to think of how magical that is as an idea, that we have this whole, this energy that is synergistic that is moving and flowing around us. And that idea led me to the world of spirals, which just get this sense of inherently the sense of movement. And thinking about the Fibonacci spiral and the golden spiral, which is the definition for formulas for creation and creation in nature. And so that as an image seemed appropriate. And so I was pulling all of this together, threading it to create this world that doesn't exist, that we're trying to give some kind of imagery to. So collectively, that at least helped me to walk into what are those shapes that I want to use on Elphaba? How do I want to use fabric on Elphaba? Much of that was just my knowledge of pleating and how you can manipulate it. And I was looking at, you know, and inspired by lots of research imagery. Iris van Herpen has done a huge amount of really interesting kinetic feeling design. So that was one of the ways that I, you know, inspired by fashion and pulling that kind of idea into what this world might be. And also, like for Glinda, the idea of the spiral and some of the imagery on her, the bubble dress, and then also throughout and even into the second film. And just to say, what people don't realize is there's this whole other part of the story that they haven't seen. And there's a huge amount of design that's in that film as well that I'm really excited to be able to share in a year. But it provided a literal cornucopia of imagery in thinking about nature and thinking about spirals and how I could manipulate that to create a world.
Yeah. And once you learn, if you haven't seen it, Dress listeners, if you have not seen Wicked, or you now need to go back and watch it again, because all the things that Paul's talking about, now when you start looking for it, it's there and it's absolutely incredible. The spirals are there. Also, the asymmetry, I think, is maybe one of the more obvious or something you might notice watching, especially in the Shiz University uniforms. The asymmetry is pretty much consistent throughout everywhere. And that's individualized across all of these different background characters and main characters. Everybody, again, has been thought out and given the attention and the detail, and then to come together to create this incredibly magical world. And just a couple other things, just in terms of learning the story, just from articles I've read with interviews with you, the stories, some of those stories that you kind of have sewn into these characters are like the reason why Elphaba wears black to begin with. I never even thought about that or considered that. Can you tell us a little bit about that decision?
Sure. And what was so wonderful just about the process, we were always asking questions of each other. What defines this world? Why are they wearing what they're wearing? Or why is, as you just asked, why is Elphaba in black? I designed Elphaba to be in black because I was inspired by The Wicked Witch of the West from the MGM film and that as an icon. And then deciding that that ties her or connects her to a story as a young girl, it makes for a clear through line and making that choice. But we also needed to have an intellectual idea behind why she was in black and why is she wearing black as a little girl. And I knew immediately, you know, and that's where, you know, as a designer, there's a part of my brain is working things out. And then I'm making it more specific and literal as I draw it out and, you know, and then working with literal imagery. But where that comes from is her mother dies early in her life. Her mother dies when she's a little girl, when actually in giving birth to her sister. And you realize in the story of the film is that Elphaba is carrying around a lot of guilt around that, because the reason that her mother dies is because the father forces her to eat this herb, which will hopefully make her Elphaba's sister, Nessa Rose, not green. He's concerned that they're going to have a second green child. And so Elphaba has been carrying around this guilt for at least up until college age. And so with the intensity of that as an idea, my thought that she is emotionally stunted because of that trauma that she received when she was a young girl, a little girl. So when we first meet her as a little girl, she's completely dressed in black. But that black, the interest is very, very intricate. These leaves that spiral around her pinafore. And then also her sleeves are micropleated so that they have texture as well. And she's in boots that are appropriate for a little girl. But all of this lead up to where Elphaba ends up being when she enters into Shiz. And then from the point that she enters into Shiz, then she continues her style trajectory in a way that makes sense, that she goes into uniform. And that first uniform, which is a tailored suit, it's a skirt suit or a dress suit, that suit, it makes sense because it's reflective of her Victorian silhouettes from when she first arrived at Shiz. Albeit those Victorian silhouettes are, there's creative license there as well, because it's not literal to the 19th century, but it has reference to that in the corset tree and what that shape is and what the overall silhouette of the skirt is. And then with the uniform, it has steps where we go to a dress that has a blouse that feels a little more opened up. And then we go to a trouser look, that interaction in the Asdas ballroom where she has the hat that was given to her by Glinda as a joke, and then she imbues that hat with power. And then after Popular, she changes and she opens up and she softens and she becomes more agile with her trouser silhouette and the short kilt and the vest. And then has that moment in the forest with Fiero. And there's this visual growth in her character that I was working to show so that you are following what's going on internally. And I think that all the way through is what I'm looking for as I'm designing any character, really, is that we get this sense of from day to day over this year, the growth for this woman is represented in these different kinds of silhouettes.
Yeah. And I read an interview with you too, where you talked about how that's even in conversation with Glinda, who would appear to be her polar opposite, but that by the time they go to the Emerald City together, they're wearing almost a similar silhouette, which again is without saying a word, communicating to the audience that they are in tune with one another.
Exactly. Exactly. And it gets them to a place of zero. So knowing that going into the second film, they're going to go in two different directions, really. Their choices are defined by what is important for them, while still carrying a bond of friendship.
Which is the heart of this story and just so incredibly beautiful. So reading and watching interviews with you, which I've spent the last couple of weeks doing, a lot of things become very clear. Your intentionality behind everything, of course, but also that you really value this collaborative nature of what you do. And of course, is essential to what you do. You're very much part of a team, be it the larger production team. There's the director, set designer, all of the actors you work very closely with. But then, of course, your team. And you've talked about all of these details. And none of this could be possible without all of these people that you work with. And in a recent interview I read, you said that there's over 1,000 costumes crafted by a team of, I think, 130 costumers of various professions across 4 different countries. Can you tell us about your team's role in bringing your vision to life? And this is something that you've called a, quote, true labor of love and collaboration, this film.
Absolutely. And the importance, I stand by that just with all my being. I could never do it alone. Even I reflect back on designing The Wiz when I was 16. I corralled my whole family to be a part of that experience.
Right.
And with everything that was required of this film and every production, that's what brings me joy, is opening it up and collaborating in different ways with the people that are part of my team, because they bring insight that is additive as I'm directing them to do X, Y, and Z or engage certain people, that their input, the people that they know, is additive to then the experience of designing. And that is, I respect that. And it's huge for me. When we were setting up for Wicked, originally we were planning on shooting in Atlanta. And then for certain reasons, they made the decision that we would film in London, which was hugely beneficial just because of access to amazing craftspeople and artisans, tailors. And mainly because the system there tends to be like a cottage industry. It's people that are working out of their homes or in smaller shops and only able to take on smaller projects. And because I had done musicals and other stage productions, I knew that was part of the system. Dulcie Scott, who was the wardrobe supervisor on my team, she actually is from London, so knew who to go to, who to engage to bring on board, because what seemed to be the best approach was to create our own workshop on the studio lot to then be able to have everyone under the same roof.
Wow.
And, you know, it was just invaluable to be able to go downstairs, you know, and what was also wonderful as well, and just so memorable, is the way that the workshop was set up is you could pass through our offices, which is where we were, you know, that was where the buyer was, where I was choosing fabrics. We had a huge, it must have been 20-foot long table that, you know, where we would lay everything out and make decisions daily. And then you'd walk through the door and then you were in the Alphabet room and you were surrounded by all this black, pleated, textured, felted fabric. But it was kind of, you know, it was because of the amount of black fabric that was in the room, it had a dark feel, but specific to Alphabet, you know. And there was the person who was her tailor, amazing, and she had worked with Vivian Westwood, but just had this really, just her personality in general was also a little moody, which was great. It was perfect.
Yeah,
great. But then you pass to the right and push through this barred door, and when you opened it up, there was this pink, sparkly, bubbly, you know, light, a room full of gossamer fabrics and just all of this light that was generated. And it was also on the side of the building that was getting all the light was flying into it. But it became like a Willy Wonka adventure, that process of creating. I think it just turned out that way, but it was all part of the experience. And everyone, the 130 people that were under that roof, I think were really inspired by that kind of energy and being surrounded by other people who were hugely talented. And, you know, having all of the custom embroiderers and knitters and weavers, that those were downstairs. And that's where so much of the kind of nitty gritty manufacturing was happening as well. And I think that we set up an environment that always felt very creative, and where things were being researched and developed and sampled. And there were long boards of different kinds of pleating and different kinds of origami patterns and also just patterns of fabrics and different sewing techniques that all made for this hugely creative space. And I think that I give up to the idea of having a team that understands what it takes to create this kind of world, and then they go about collecting as much as possible what's necessary to then be able to approach it. And I always want to set up an environment where that kind of engagement is really encouraged, because I think that's where you get your best work. And I think that we definitely did it with Wicked.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm getting excited you just talking about it. And of course, your team has been so generous with sharing images with me, which I will also share with our listeners, that take us behind the scenes into this process. There's this wonderful board that comes to mind immediately that has all of the different experimentations, right? Because it's not like you design something and then it's just made. There's a process. All the different experimentations coming up with the Alphabet fabric and how that fabric's going to move on the body. And do you want it closer together? Do you want a wider wave? And you get to see that process. And then you get to see that process on the mannequin. So not only is your team creating the different fabrics, then they're creating it on the form. And then, of course, actually getting it on the actor is another process. So that was really cool to see. Also, I have to say, I think it's very obvious that John, the director, also appreciates how much work you've done, because I thought I was going to have to tell people, okay, you're not going to get to see the shoes, but here's the shoes, because the shoes are insane. Yeah. And there are so many shoe moments in the film where you can see the handiwork of these cobblers who handmade these shoes.
John was, it was such a joy to work with him, one, but then also throughout the filming and the pre-production as well. But when, I think it was probably inspired, maybe you were speaking of all the research and development that we were doing on the forms, you know, and I, John would come through and he was just delighted by our whole world. And I, you know, it's rare to have a director be excited about what we're doing in the costume world. It just doesn't usually happen, but he became really excited about it. And also the producers were very excited about it. But then when we had fully realized costumes that with the performers in those costumes stepping onto set, you know, he made it a point to, and he actually said, and you know, I want to capture as much as I can get of everything that you've done, that you've designed, and how you've created, helped to create this world. And he did. You know, there indeed, there are still things that didn't make it into the film, but he made every attempt to capture all the detail. The same for Alice Brooks, the cinematographer, and how things are lit, how she carefully lit Elphaba so that you really see all the variants of textures and detail and depth. And that's something that's very, very tricky to do. And making it intentional and making it, you know, a priority to pull that into defining what our world of Oz is really what that's all about. I mean, it's, you know, and I give that up to them. But it was so beautiful to be able to offer them this canvas of textured world that they could then define. Our film is just wonderful.
Yeah, I was going to say, you made it really easy for them, I'm sure. And there's a lot of attention, obviously, on Galinda and Elphaba, but Morrible's costumes are just so exceptional. And what I loved too, again, I got a sneak peek at some of these details before I saw the film, but you could see the hand embroidery on her costumes. Yeah. And every single thing, and the collars, Paul, her collars, light as air.
Yeah.
Just.
Again, it was just the joy of dressing somebody like Michelle Yeoh, who loves clothing. And I do want to give it up to all of this amazing cast of people who love dressing in clothing and value what costumes bring to their performance. It made the job just that much more joyous in being able to create the different characters, definitely.
Well, and I think costumes is such a big part of character development for a lot of actors. And so you really help them literally step into that role. So it's a very significant thing that you do and do incredibly well. So you've been so generous with your time. I just have one more question for you, because I haven't been this excited about a movie in a really long time. I know I'm not alone. The excitement surrounding this movie is palpable. I'm sure you feel it. This is just such a gift right now for so many of us. So I know what this film means to me, but what does it mean to you?
Oh, boy. I mean, it's when I was asked to design Wicked, and I started to listen to the music over and over again, and I realized that the story speaks to me so directly because it speaks of a person who is different, struggling to be seen, and then moving towards, I mean, to the second film, that she's vilified for the way that she looks. And, you know, it's in a very real way, my connection to Elphaba's story is reflective of me as a person of color in our country and the structure of our social world here. And that's what is very important for me, is to represent this metaphor for where we are. And it is this wonderful love story between these two friends that were polar opposites, but in being put into the same space, they find a relationship that creates this huge bond, and they change each other's lives. And the magic of that, you know, when you think about that in reality, is also representative of how I relate to people. And so overall, as a big life story, it speaks so directly to how I walk through life and what I think is important about life as well.
Thank you for that. And thank you so much for being here. This has been such a pleasure.
For me as well. Thank you.
Paul, thank you for being so generous with sharing the stories literally sewn into the seams of the Wicked film's costumes.
He truly is such an incredibly thoughtful designer. And when I say every single detail was thought out, I mean every detail, and the meaning is layered and it runs really deep. I mean, there's so many details that we didn't get to touch on in this interview, and that includes things that he mentioned in a recent Playbill interview that I read, in which he shared that there are triangles that are threaded thematically throughout Elphaba's wardrobe and her buttons, which all are meant to link her to her iconic hat. And then there's also Nessa Rose's silver shoes, inherited from her mother, that have tornado-like swirls. April, have you seen the film? If you have, did you notice these details?
I have not seen it yet, but I plan to do so as soon as I get back to New York City. I'm visiting my mom right now, so I'm recording from her house. But yes, that is on my to-do list for the next few days, coming up soon.
I had the pleasure of seeing the film on Friday. It does not disappoint. It is so incredible. It's so heartwarming. It's so beautiful. And then to be able to have talked to Paul and learn all about his and his team's work made that experience all the more special. I really cannot say enough wonderful things about this movie. And even now that I've had this interview with Paul, I'm going to go back and look for more details that him and I talked about, because there really is so much to unpack there and so much to see.
Which our listeners can do too, if they haven't seen it yet already. So
yes,
we're giving you guys the inside scoop.
Well, I think that does it for us today, dress listeners. May you consider the magic that resides in your life and your clothes next time you get dressed.
Remember, we love hearing from you, so feel free to reach out to us at hello@dressedhistory.com if you'd like to send us an email. Dressedhistory.com is also our website, where you will find more information about our upcoming classes, tours, and anything else we have up our finely tailored sleeves next.
Yes, and actually there's a lot of things coming your way, dress listeners. We are very close to opening registration for our next Dress the School of Fashion online course, which we're going to co-teach in the early months of next year. And that's going to be on the 1950s golden age of haute couture. And we'll be posting that next week or in the next 2 weeks. And then in the next 2 weeks, also, I would be expecting us, hopefully, to be announcing officially our Dress Fashion History 2025 tour of Paris. So very soon. If you want to get on that list, it is expected to sell out very quickly. So if you want to be among the first to know about it, send us an email and you will get on that list.
Yes, and actually that is something that I worked on this morning already, is compiling that entire list and like going through it with a fine tooth comb, and there are a lot of people on it. So it will sell out, and we will likely do two tours if there is enough demand. So just let us know. And, you know, again, we would love to see you all in Paris.
Yes.
Also, I would love to see you in New York City, because my fashion history tours of the Met are back. You can head over to dressedhistory.com and sign up either for Tuesday mornings with me at the Met or Friday evenings. And I also just want to mention that I can do tours for your group or organization at other times. So you just need to connect with me in advance to get that all set up. And you can do so at hello@dressedhistory.com.
And of course, if you would like to find visual content connected to each week's episodes, there's so much visual content, Wicked visual content, coming your way this week. You can follow along on Instagram at @dress_podcast. The content specifically connected to this week's episode can be found at #dress524. And also, the holidays are just around the corner. So if you want to head over to our dress bookshelf at bookshop.org/shop/dress, you can check out more than 150 of our favorite fashion history titles. We also will link to that in our show notes, so you can buy some holiday gifting for yourself or send your loved one your wish list.
Yes, you can also do that with our class. Just have your loved one shoot us an email at hello@dressedhistory.com, and we could give you potentially a class credit as well for the holidays.
Yes, absolutely.
Love dress, but want to skip the ads? Consider subscribing to the ad-free version of the show for just $3 a month, and you can find a link to do so in our show notes. As always, thank you for your continued support. More Dressed coming your way soon. Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of Dress Media.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.